Holy shit, Sarah Cooper!
Hey, what's up?
Hey! It's so nice to meet you.
I was going
to
say, why did you do that, Hurry? You dreamed like you
could. I got really excited. I'm sorry.
Sarah, I apologize for Hurry. That was a little over the top. He could have acted like
I was excited. Am I not allowed to?
You're allowed to be excited, but that was just, it's like you hadn't seen her since high school. From Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network, this is Politically Reactive. I'm W. Kamau Bell.
And I'm Townsend Harris High School's most famous alum, Hurry Kundabolu. Yeah, I said it. Suck it, Jonas Salk. Curing polio is old news.
Once again, we're two comedians taking on American politics and demanding better.
Because we deserve it. Not just Kamau and I, but all of us deserve it. But we've done 3 seasons of this show, so we definitely deserve it.
And sometimes on this show, we talk to the people doing the hard work to reinvent our democracy.
And sometimes we try to get inside of the heads of the people who are fucking it up.
I have a sneaking suspicion that he's kind of an asexual guy.
Sarah Cooper has made lip-syncing the ramblings of Donald Trump an art form and a political statement.
And with Trump on his way out, she's looking ahead with a Netflix special called Everything's Fine that's directed by Natasha Lyonne with appearances by Maya Rudolph, Ben Stiller, and Helen fucking Mirren. She may be the only person in America having a good 2020.
After that, we talked to vaccinologist Dr. Peter Hotez, one of my favorite voices from 2020 on the coronavirus.
I found myself starting to cry. I mean, that's how upset I've been getting. I mean, it's just so sad to talk about this shit.
Dr. Hotez has spent his career developing vaccines to fight diseases Big Pharma's not interested in because there's no money in it, and it doesn't get your dick hard.
We'll get his take on Operation Warp Speed, the third wave of COVID cases happening right now, and what we should all do this Thanksgiving. Hint, stay home, invite no one over.
Plus how maddening it is to believe in science and watch people in power willfully ignore and distort it like a bunch of motherfuckers.
It's all coming up on Politically Fucking Reactive.
Hey, Kamau. You know where I am right now?
Where are you right now?
I'm back in New York City, baby!
In New York!
Hurry, Kundabolu made it with his partner and baby!
Oh, wow. That falsetto went from Alicia Keys to Little Bee Gees. So now you're back in New York, you know, back where you're from, looking for a new apartment. Now that you're in San Diego, are you focusing on the Upper East Side? Is that where you feel more at home in New York now?
I'm looking into Windsor Terrace, where I had lived 10 years previous. Windsor Terrace is good because it's not Park Slope, so it's bougie enough for me, but not, you know, it protects my rep enough so I can continue doing the hard-hitting political comedy I believe in. On the plane home, it was weird, Kamau. So, like, we had the baby. It wasn't a red eye. It was, like, a noon flight, so that's good. And the baby was great, except for, like, 20 minutes in the middle of the flight where he's like, oh, wait, what the hell are we doing? Who are these people? Why am I floating in space? And then he just started, who is this person? Is that my father? So 20 minutes go by and he's screaming and then he's fine for the rest of it. So it was actually, I thought, like a really successful flight. So we land and all of a sudden I hear this guy 2 rows behind us turn to his friend and say like, man, I just couldn't sleep because there was this baby screaming right there. And he looks directly at Jocelyn and the baby. Ooh. As if we can't see, like, them doing that or hear them talking, just stares at her. And I was so angry that I almost said something, but I didn't because I'm a coward.
Yeah, and well,
it's... So I tweeted something immediately after getting off the flight.
Well, no, I just think it's really about people's misunderstanding of their own environment. Just because you can have your own phone with all your favorite songs and podcasts on it and you don't have to have conversations with other people, you're still in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you need to fly, especially right now during COVID, then you got to deal with the world.
But also the staring at Joss part, because that's not just the attitude. It's also that I want to make sure you know that we don't like the fact that you two had sex and made this thing. And this thing's yelling.
Yeah.
Even though it's over now. It's done now.
Yeah.
And you're about to go to the quietest city in the world, New York.
Well, I just also got off a plane recently. I just came back from Atlanta, Georgia, where I was filming United Shades of America. We booked this episode weeks ago or months ago. Little did we know that not only would Georgia be key in the 2020 election, but would also then have a runoff coming on January 5th, we talked about in the show last time. So it was like I went to the epicenter of everything, like in America last week. And also Georgia, like the rest of the country, is dealing with COVID. And, you know, I like Atlanta a lot. I'm happy to be out there. But also it's the South and, you know, masks are sometimes optional. Yeah, in Atlanta, I may have had a driver who picked me up at the airport not wearing a mask.
Oh my god! Like,
and I may have complained to the people at the company about it. And the awkward thing was, I complained to the people at the company about it, like while I was in the car, not realizing then, like all of a sudden his phone rang. He's like, "Hello, what?
Oh god, no! Oh god, no! Oh no!"
Yeah, so they called. I was like, I should have waited until I got to the hotel.
Wait, so what happened? Did he put on his mask then?
Yeah, he put on his mask, and then he sort of half turned around. I was like, sorry. Sorry. He was like, sorry, I didn't.
Oh, no. That's sad.
And I was just like, I'm not trying to, you know, be your dad here, but I'm also trying to not get COVID. So, and I mean, and let's be clear, I also fully masked up with the plastic face shield. So, you know, I was doing my part. I mean, I was in the Atlanta airport. Was this yesterday? Because I just got back yesterday. Whole family, like mother, dad, kids who were like my older kids' ages and a baby in a stroller, not a mask between them in the middle of the airport in Atlanta. Now, maybe they're not from Atlanta. They could be changing places. But it was just like, whoo! So I'm in no way shocked that we're in this period of like COVID spiking again. Because it is just clear that like whatever we individually might be doing, I've been good. I've stayed in my house. I wear masks. A lot of this country is either like never believed it or is in this thing of like just tired of playing by the rules.
The idea of a whole family not wearing masks, unless you're the coronavirus that somehow mutated and evolved into a human family.
Yeah.
That is inexcusable.
No, and I would like to say this too, because I think some people who wear masks forget this. And I wrote a little song for it so it can be sticky, so you can remember it. Your nose is a part of your face.
Dun, dun, dun,
your
dun.
Nose is a part of your face.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's the whole song.
It's good. It has a good hook.
Yeah, no. Yeah, your nose is a part of your face, everybody. So just because you don't get partial mask credit by having having the mask cover your mouth or under your chin. There's no such thing as partial credit for not spreading the coronavirus. I just saw this thing on CNN where a healthcare worker somewhere in the country, I think Nebraska, talks about how she is working people who are dying for COVID in the hospital saying, "I don't understand how this happened. This is a hoax." Like, still believing it's a hoax. And she said, they say that stuff up until the point they're intubated.
Right.
That's why I'm happy that today on the episode we have Dr. Peter Hotez. There's a lot of medical doctors on TV talking about the coronavirus, picking up the slack for the Trump administration. But he's one of my favorites because it was always clear from the beginning that he's like, you people have no idea what you're doing. This is going to get bad. And so I always would, you know, some doctors try to put a little bit of a good face on it. He was never doing that. And so I'm happy we have him on the show today. But before we talk to Dr. Peter Hotez, Sarah Cooper, who's like, as you said earlier, one of the people who's having a good 2020 around here.
Sarah Cooper is so funny. She has a special Everything's Fine that is hilarious and unique. It's, you know, you might, if you're familiar with her and the videos she does where she lip syncs Trump, there is some of that in here, but it's so complex. It has great production values. Considering it's COVID, I find that unbelievable. And we had a really great conversation with her. Sarah Cooper is an author and comedian based in New York City. Earlier this year, she began uploading videos of herself lip-syncing statements made by Donald Trump to TikTok.
Those videos became a huge phenomenon, leading up to her having a primetime appearance at August's Democratic National Convention, and a lot more followed.
Including her Netflix special, Sarah Cooper, Everything's Fine, and working with CBS on a series based on her book, How to Be Successful Without Hurting Men's Feelings.
Let's talk to the winner of 2020, Sarah Cooper.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on Politically Reactive.
Oh my God, is that where I am? I'm so excited. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the popular podcast, Politically Reactive. That's how I describe So what else do you do? Oh, I'm the co-host of the popular podcast, Politically Reactive.
It's really important that you say popular, huh?
It reminds people that it's a thing.
Was that the original name, Popular Politically Reactive Podcast?
Oh, I thought you were saying, is that my original name, like Popular Hari Kondabolu? That would have been brilliant. This is a question I've been thinking about a lot recently, because I just had a kid.
Wow,
yeah,
congrats.
Thank you. So for you, is it strange to have such a great career year during one of the worst years in humanity?
Yes, it does. It's really hard to be like too excited, you know, because you're like, I'm really excited about everything that's happening. But at the same time, it's you're watching a lot of stuff happen that isn't really that inspiring or makes me feel that happy. Although now I'm feeling very happy. So right. I feel like there's like a light at the end of the tunnel. But for a while it was like talking to friends and just being like, oh my God, I just met Ben Stiller. What have you been up to?
Oh, you know, scared to death, searching for PPE.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, PPE, what is that? You know, I was really out of touch, you know.
Do your views feel cathartic when you do them at all? Like when you take these terrible things, let's say that Trump has done, and you get to show how ridiculous they are. Like, does it give you a degree of catharsis, or at this point, is it too hard to even feel something?
They do. Yeah, they really do. It's a lot of fun making them, actually. I kind of like being stupid and confident, you know, like the combination of stupidity and confidence in his voice is just a lot of fun. It's not something that I have, you know, like I'm usually like, you know, I censor everything I say constantly because I don't want to sound stupid. And if I say something, I constantly just rethink it in my head
right.
over and over again. And, you know, months later, I'm like, oh, why didn't I say that? You know, but he doesn't have that, you know, he just is like, yeah. Everything I say is brilliant. And it's just like, it's like a superpower. So for me, it's a lot of fun. And then I get to like make fun of him while I'm doing it. And I'm kind of, you know, showing the world like how he's saying absolutely nothing, and that's a lot of fun.
So Sarah, if you can, Sarah, take me back to January. You know, every year every comedian has like a, this is what I'm hoping to accomplish this year. There's, you know, clearly there's no way you could have saw all of this coming. What would a good year have been for you before all this happened?
Well, first I have to say it's really nice to meet you, Kamau.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
I've seen you perform before. I came to a few tapings of your show, I think. So yeah.
Oh, totally biased. The
totally biased. Yeah. So just wanted to say that.
When you first started to pop off, I would just want to say this, like there's a lot of videos of people sort of having fun on TikTok, but it was very clear to me that I was like, wait, this is somebody who actually knows what they're doing. And then I started to look for it. I was like, oh, not only are you a comedian, but you follow me on Twitter. And I was like, I felt sort of proud of myself in that moment that like this is so, I don't know this person, but I feel like, I feel like this is my friend now, you know? So, so very early on your success, I was very proud of your success. I think there was a little bit of like, people didn't realize that you weren't a professional comedian at first, cause it was just these videos. And so I was like, no, she's an actual comedian. Follow her on Twitter. Cause that was the thing I also appreciated. Your tweets separate from any TikTok was also just like, this is really a funny writer.
I never could have foreseen this. I've gone viral before. I had 10 Tricks to Appear Smart Meetings was an article I wrote a while ago, and that turned into a book. And but then that didn't really change my life the way that this changed my life, you know? So I thought maybe, yeah, a viral video would be cool. TMZ wanted to interview me. I did an interview with TMZ. I told all my friends, I was like, I'm going to be on TMZ, you guys. And then they didn't even air it because it wasn't like, you know, they didn't think anybody would care about me. So, yeah. And so it was just like going from that to like, you know, a month ago, they wanted to interview me and I just didn't have time, you know, like I just I had to say no. So, yeah, it's been a great year. It's been a great year.
You're special. Everything's Fine is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure, I mean, and also because I feel like there must have been such pressure because you were put in this position where everyone is making like assumptions. Well, she does the thing with Trump. So what could she possibly do in this thing? Plus, yeah. You're limited by production values because you can only do so much during COVID. And you took that and made something that's so subversive. Well, there's a sequence where you recreate the Access Hollywood bus scene that Trump and Billy Bush were involved in. And the way you do it is so brilliant. It's like you took what you were doing before, a particular form of comedy, and you elevated it to such a level. Like, first of all, how hard was it to make this special during COVID? How did you get all these incredible stars to be on it? And I want to know who your influences are, because the thing, it was an absurdist, brilliant, absurd. Like, I saw Mr. Show in it. I felt like Ernie Kovacs. I felt like there was all these pieces of stuff where I'm like, oh my God, like this is.
Yeah, I am a big fan of Mr. Show. So that was kind of when I went to Natasha and Maya, who I'm strangely on like first name basis with now. I said that I wanted to create something that was a sketch and variety special, but I wanted it to feel like one thing, because I just love the way Mr. Show like used transitions to just, you never really even saw it coming. Like you heard a jingle and then all of a sudden you were in the conference room where they were coming up with that jingle. And then all of a sudden you saw the commercial and like, it was just like so cool. So that was a big inspiration for me. God, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I'll be honest with you. I was in a writer's room last year for a pilot that didn't get picked up. And that was my first writing job, like real serious comedy writing job. And then besides the books, and then I was hiring writers. I think it took me like 3 weeks, which we only had 3 weeks. It was a 3 weeks writer room. And it took me till the very end of that to be like, oh no, wait, I have a weird sense of humor. Like it took me a while to be like, no, this is, I kind of like things that are a little bit fucked up, you know? And it took me a while to realize that. And so then we had to hire like an additional writer's room. The writer's list is pretty long, because like we had like 6 solid weeks of writing, and even on the set we were like still writing, you know. So it just took a while. And I think it's also like when you work with people that you've never met before, like I've never met Natasha before or Maya, and all of a sudden Natasha and I are on the phone constantly, like we're texting, we're Zooming, we're doing all of this stuff, and we have to make something and put it out in the world. It was almost like an apprentice challenge, you know what I mean? It was like Trump was like, you got to make a special. I'm super proud of how it came out. I mean, there are definitely things I watch it now and I'm like, oh, I wish that was a little different, But I mean, I can't believe I was able to like do all of that. I still don't even really comprehend the fact that I was in a scene with Helen Mirren. And I feel like almost like, did I shoot my shot? Like, am I never, ever going to do anything as good as that ever again? You know, that's kind of how I feel.
When I first heard that you got the Netflix special, I was like, first of all, of course. And second of all, oh, what time next year or the year after that is that coming out? And the announcement was like, I think it was sometime in the summer, and they're like in October. And I was like, that is a extremely ridiculous, impossible, I would say impossible, but you pulled it off, tight turnaround. And I got scared. because I was afraid, like, she's going to shoot her shot, but there's not enough time. But you pulled it off. But I just
you.
Really.
Thank you for getting scared for me. That's really empathetic of you. I feel like now we'll have that feeling now. If I see this happen to someone else, I think I will be like, oh my God, how are they going to get that done?
Yeah.
Because I know how much it takes. Usually it takes like for an hour of content, it takes like 6 weeks to edit. They had like less than 2 to edit this. And so it was just like an all night marathon. And I have to give a lot of credit to Natasha, because she's just like the Energizer Bunny. She has so much energy and she just like did not quit. She was such a powerhouse, and that's getting the stars. That was a lot of it was her. A lot of it was her like being really creative with casting. And I was just every time somebody said yes, like Winona Ryder said she wanted to be in it, I was like, oh my God, Winona Ryder. And then Jane Lynch and like all these people that I just look up to so much. And again, I feel like, have I done it? Have I done everything? Can I die now? Like, I don't know, but hopefully not.
How did you get on TikTok to begin with? Like, are you always like the first to get on a new platform and try things out? Or like, how did you end up on it? And then how did you decide to start making these videos?
My nephew showed it to me like last summer, and
oh my God.
They were like, Aunt Sarah, you're definitely too old for this. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. And I put it away. I didn't look at it again until the pandemic, until I was like stuck at home. I was trying to just do the memes I sound so old. I do
what means. Like it's a dance. Yeah.
But yeah, I was trying to dance. It didn't work. And then I was trying to listen. I have all of my sets from the open mics. I was doing open mics. I was hosting open mics at the beginning of the year, and I had all of my audio. And I started to think, oh, I'll lip sync myself and I'll reenact my set. So that was like one idea I had. And then I was lip syncing singing. And then I just came across Trump, like a clip from Trump. And I was just like, it would be cool to just like lip sync this, like just in a sweatshirt. And just like, I'm just like a guy talking in a meeting and I have no idea what I'm saying. And so that's kind of what happened. I was just really experimenting.
How long does it take to get like your average, like one of those videos together? Like, is it, cause it, the way it's clearly there's several internal cuts. You're clearly doing multiple takes, but there is a sense of like, it feels like you just sort of like threw it up there. But I would imagine there's a lot more art in it than that.
Sometimes there is, and then sometimes there's not, you know, like the one, MAGA loves the black people. Mm-hmm. That one was just a 15 second clip and it took me, you know, maybe 30 minutes to do. I had to hold the hair dryer over here, like off camera, so that my hair would blow, cause he was standing next to a helicopter and stuff. So 2 to 3 hours, for like, you know, a 30 second clip. And then the longer ones, like the man or person, man, woman, camera, TV,
oh, man.
Which was like almost 2 minutes long. That took me like almost all day to make that one. It just, and he just kept repeating himself and I just kept getting confused. Like, didn't I already say that? Like, you know, I was literally losing my mind making that one.
The videos had this incredible crossover effect when you like people, like you get comments like, I love Trump, but this is funny. You're such a politicized person. At least reading your tweets, it's like, this is a person that's on the hard left, right? This is a person who has very strong opinions and shares them very bluntly. Did you get people who are like, I'm not following you for political stuff, even though, like,
even though I came to you because you were making fun of the president.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether they hate you or not, it does make Trump go down a little bit easier. Like it does, or, you know, because I find that
it's
I will watch.
It's a weird way to put it, Kamau.
You're right. It's funny, in my mind, I was like, is this weird? And I was like, it's not, but then you're right. It makes it easier to take Trump. That's not good either. Are you watching the, like when he speaks, are you watching it like waiting for the moment where like that's it? Does it pop out to you? Do you have to, is it hard to study? And also, or do you see him speak sometimes like, I don't want to do this? Like, I would imagine it's so depressing that it's probably like, it feels like a homework assignment.
Yes. I mean, it was feeling like that for a while. I do still listen to like a lot of things that he says. And like apparently he, about a few weeks ago, he said, I'm never going to lose to a loser like that. Biden's the worst candidate ever. If I lose to someone like him, what does that make me? And I'm like, oh, I should do that. Cause he's actually lost to him now. So that's kind of funny. And so, yeah, I get ideas like that all the time, but then, you know, I got to be on a politically reactive podcast and I like just don't have time. So, you know, I don't get to it.
We'll cut this interview 15 seconds short. So you can go do that one.
On your special, the Access Hollywood bus, the object of your leering and affection is Jonathan Van Ness.
Yeah.
Like, was that your option one? Cause that seems like an option one.
We definitely wanted to figure out how to subvert we didn't want it to be a woman, obviously. Like, right. We needed it to be not a woman, but we just love the idea of Jonathan Van Ness because he challenges like every conception you have about gender and what it means to be fluid and all of this stuff. And so Natasha was the one who came up with the idea, and I was just like, I love that. Perfect. I think that's amazing. Because it really is a shock when you see who we're leering at and who we're just right. Like treating like a piece of meat, you know, two women treating Jonathan Van Ness like a piece of meat. It was just so much fun.
You had a spot at the Democratic National Convention this year, mm-hmm. but not actually at the convention. Right. So what, like, how surreal is that? Because you're one of the speakers and you're one of the people on the convention I don't even know how to describe it. Would you describe it as a television show this year? It feels like
it was a TV
show. It was pretty much like a TV show. Yeah. And I didn't think anybody was going to actually watch the Democratic National Convention. I really didn't.
You know, it usually rates pretty well.
I thought because it was virtual, I thought, oh, this is going to be on a website somewhere. I really, right. That's what I really thought. And then people were like, oh no, you're on television. This is, you know, part of the program and stuff. I was like, oh wow. I'm so much like that with everything that I do, really. Like, I'm just like, oh, I'll just wing it. And then it turns out to be this thing that everyone's going to see. So they asked me to do it. And it's so funny because I was talking about mail-in ballots and he was going on about, don't do it. Mail-in ballots are fraudulent. You know, they're going to get, you know, all this, you know, stuff is, you know, they're going to be stolen in the mailboxes, all this stuff. And then he complains about not getting any mail-in ballots, you know, like he spent the entire time saying mail-in ballots are bad and then so ridiculous.
Like right now, all the like the Republicans are like really proud of the fact that they didn't lose any incumbents because the election was so good for them. But there's also voter fraud because Trump lost. I don't know.
Right.
I don't
know. There's rampant voter fraud.
Yeah.
Millions of votes are affected, but yes. Nothing in the congressional race. That makes sense.
Do you feel hopeful with Biden?
Yes, I do. Okay. I really do. I mean, everything's relative, right?
Yeah.
So if we're comparing anything to what we've had, I just feel like it's going to be a new day. It just felt like when they announced it on Saturday, it felt like a new day in America.
Right.
It was sunny. There was good weather. People were riding their bikes and shorts. It was great. I just feel like I love having someone in charge who I trust and I just can relax just a little bit and not have to think about this fucking asshole anymore. Like, I just don't want to think about him anymore. So I feel like that is going to be awesome. You know, is he the most progressive person? No. Unless you listen to the Republicans. If you watch Fox News, he is radical left.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. He's Lenin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that he is going to be just us crawling our way out of almost fascism. And we'll get there. You know what I mean?
Have you been reached out by anybody from Trump or Trump camp? Or do you know, does he, I can't remember if he has acknowledged you at ever or.
So. There was a British journalist who asked him in an interview if he'd seen my videos. And he said no. And he like asked if they were positive and he said he would check them out.
He's a liar. He's seen them. He's seen every single one of them.
He's seen them. Yeah.
Are they positive? Well, they're just your words exactly.
So. Yeah. Right. You're going to love them. Yeah.
They're literally no distortion. Just your words.
Exactly what lips, you said.
I'm sure he can flip that into, she loves me so much. She's right. Just lip syncing my words. You've probably studied more Donald Trump
than anybody.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know his words better than he does because clearly he doesn't keep track of them as they come out of his mouth.
Yeah. But, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of words, but I feel like I even like live lip synced his one of his things for 4th of July. And it really wasn't that hard, actually. Because he only has a few things and you can kind of tell where he's going. And I think that's kind of what his supporters like about him. You feel like in control because you always know what he's going to say. You know, build the wall. You know, lock her up. You like, you know it.
You know the hits.
So, you know the hits.
And he also does that. He repeats. He sort of says the thing. He goes, oh, I like that. And he repeats it a few times. Like it's the chorus to a song. Yeah. He's very like, he's like, oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. Time will tell.
I just want to see him falling on his ass and like unable to kind of like get up, like rolling over, like trying
like,
to get up.
Like
and
turtling, like sort of like, sort of like spinning around.
Yeah.
And then being pulled back up by several Secret Service agents. And then having that look on his face, like when somebody tries to play, like, nobody saw that, right? I think he would totally get the, like, nobody saw that. That was.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just at a rally with 80,000 people. Nobody saw that, right? Yeah. We're all good.
Even the Access Hollywood clip, he says, I don't want to fall out of the bus. Remember, like, Ford?
Oh, that's
Ford?
Right.
He's so scared of it.
Do you think you know anything about Trump that other people don't know because you've studied him so much? Is there anything that you've observed? It could be good, bad, or indifferent. Just something that you, like, feel like.
I have a sneaking suspicion that he's kind of an asexual guy.
Huh.
And like even in that clip, the Access Hollywood, like he was being egged on a lot by Billy Bush, you know, like he was like, look, your girl's hot as shit. Look at the legs, like all that stuff. And Trump was kind of like, yeah, looks good. But he seems to be so obsessed with himself that I don't think he's this like, I think he's into sex and stuff like that just because he thinks he's supposed to, or maybe it makes him feel macho, but I don't think he actually is, you know what I mean? He's a germaphobe. Like, I actually think that he really he's asexual. That's what
is,
I think.
Is it that he's so into himself that being into another person, even like sexually, kind of betrays the idea that, well, that means maybe. I potentially find this person more sexual or sexy than me.
Right. And that's why his longest his longest sexual infatuation has been his daughter.
I knew we were going there.
His flesh and blood. And
that explains the look that's on Melania's face 95% of the time.
Can you imagine being married to him and he's just ogling his daughter while you're in the room?
No. Yeah. Yeah. On that note, thanks for doing Politically React.
Are you having fun? Like, are you enjoying, you know, because like so many of the videos, you know, obviously they're on your phone and like they're being done like in your home and, you know, like everything is strange. Like this, all this stuff's happening, but you're in the same place. And, you know, it hasn't been like the full on experience of going to a talk show, being at a table, hosting Jimmy Kimmel Live at the, you know, at the actual
hugging set, Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
Well, right. Exactly. Right. I mean, so with all this being said, like, are you able to enjoy this year?
I try not to enjoy any success that I have.
Good.
That's the right answer.
A true comedian.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like moving on to the next thing. And the thing that I think that I have been able to find is like a real joy in writing that I didn't think I had before, like a real desire to write things I genuinely care about and not be like ashamed that I think this isn't cool or this isn't what people want to hear about. And I feel like I've gotten a lot closer to that this year, which has been awesome.
Also, as a parent who has my wife's white, I have mixed race kids, therefore two of their light-skinned black women kids I have. And part of the thing that when I first saw you, I was like, she's black, and I bet people don't realize this.
They don't. I tweeted the other day, what's black but doesn't feel black? And I got some like hate from this girl, and she like, I wrote her, I was just like, I didn't mean to trigger you or whatever. And she was just like, you know, I just got triggered because a lot of people say that I'm, you know, not black enough. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh my God, they say that about me too. And she was just like, you're black?
Oh, jeez. <So, like, laughs>
We could have ended this whole Twitter beef earlier.
Right. So, yeah, I feel that. I didn't even know what the question was.
Well, no, I just, what is it like to be in this, you know, you sort of live your life and then your identity becomes far more politicized when the more famous you become.
Yeah.
And far more, and whatever your blackness level or comfort or identity was before, you're seeing other people process it through their eyes and then having your expectations. I say this as a person who just today on Instagram got told I wasn't black enough. So even, and I'm pretty, you know, people can tell I'm black from like a mile away, but because of the fact I'm married to a white woman, some people think I'm not black enough. So I just think that like, that's another thing you have to sort of factor into your fame is like, wow, I'm attaining my dreams. Oh, also I'm not doing a good job of my blackness that I've been doing all my life.
And also if you're not really, you're not really sure about your identity because people think I'm Indian. People think I'm all kinds of things. Like I get all kinds of things. So, and then I'm Jamaican. So I wasn't born here. So I'm an immigrant. And that's like, I'm African-American, but then am I, you know, because I'm Jamaican, you know, so there's all this stuff going on with it. And I was thinking about it, like, you know that quote from Ira Glass that's like, you have to make a lot of work before the work is as good as your taste. Like, you know, I feel like that's how I feel with like putting myself out there. It's like I feel like I'm the product now. I'm the thing that I'm making, and I want it to be as good as I think it can be. And so I don't think I am where I want to be. There's a lot more that I think I can do and say and like really solidify about who I am and what I really believe. And so I feel like it's just like a work in progress, you know?
Well, I'm really looking forward to post-COVID, post-vaccine Sarah Cooper work just to see it's like when you're unleashed by the confines. And post-Trump, I think that's a part of it too. Just to see, because I think the thing that's very clear from like following you on Twitter is like you're a force of nature. And I think when people see the videos, like, yeah, that's great. But also that's just like the sizzle. The steak is there's more here. So, I'm really looking forward to that.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
Well, I hope you feel like that the special is that a step into like, hey, I do more than this thing. I'm a fucking brilliant comic because it was so good.
I'm a very popular comic.
Well, thank you for coming on Popular Politically Reactive Podcast. Sarah Cooper is a writer and comedian based in New York City.
Her incredible special, Sarah Cooper, Everything's Fine, is now on Netflix.
Up next, we talk to Dr. Peter Hotez, vaccine developer and passionate critic of the Trump administration's response to COVID-19. We want to hear your reactions to the conversations we're having on Politically Reactive. Leave us a message at 917-477-6525.
Again, that's 917-477-6525. Or use the hashtag PoliticallyReactive on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to tell us what you think and what you want.
And subscribe if you're not already subscribed. Share the episodes with the people you love. And give us a review on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. I guess also you could share the episodes with the people you hate.
Actually, it's more important if you share it with the people you hate.
That's true.
A click's a click.
Anyway, subscribe, share the episodes, give us reviews. It definitely makes a difference. Look, I've been wanting to talk about COVID-19 ever since we relaunched Politically Reactive. And with the huge spike happening right now, we couldn't wait any longer. So I'm really glad we got to talk to one of the people I've looked up to for real information about this pandemic since the very beginning, Dr. Peter Hotez. You may have seen him on CNN or MSNBC. He's been tireless in trying to bring real science to challenge misinformation from the White House and elsewhere. And also, he's going to hold me to account for my Twitter beef with the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams.
Dr. Hotez has a deep knowledge of viruses and vaccines. He directs the Texas Children's Center for Vaccine Development and is dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston.
He's developed many vaccines over the years and has written several books, including one that's about to drop called Preventing the Next Pandemic, Vaccine Diplomacy in a Time of Anti-Science.
Time to talk to Dr. Hotez, not to be confused with Dr. Hotep.
Dr. Hotez, welcome to Politically Reactive. Thank you for doing this.
It's a real honor. Great to be here. Thank you.
I have to say that, like, as many people were during the early days of the pandemic, and also because I work at CNN, I was watching a lot of CNN, and it was very, and a lot of doctors who came on, I felt like were really doing their best to say, this is what could happen, but trying not to send people into a panic. And it's not that you sent me into a panic, but you were very clear, I felt, from the beginning, like, this is bad, everybody, pay attention. And I just really appreciated that from the very top. I just want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, the message that I try to do is, yes, this is why it's going to be bad, but giving the assumptions behind it, why I think so, it gives people some level of control. If they understand what exactly is happening, rather than just saying it's going to be bad, you know, here's why it's going to be bad, and this is what we can expect, for instance, this fall and winter. And the thing that I'm trying to do now, which has been really tough, is to say this is going to be an absolutely horrible, horrible winter, but hang on, because there's brackets around it this time around, as opposed to the first two peaks when we really didn't have a lot to go on in terms of offering hope. Now I think we're going to have an array of vaccines, so that it's not like we're going to ask you to endure hardship in perpetuity. There's just hang on for the next few months and get through this, and don't let your loved ones succumb to all the crazy rhetoric and potentially lose their lives. Think how terrible you'll feel if you lose a father or mother or brother or sister during this 3-4 month period, knowing that 6 months from now they're going to be vaccinated and they could have another 20, 30 years of life.
President Trump spoke publicly for the first time in a week to claim credit for the progress that Pfizer has made with its vaccine. And he also made a bunch of other claims about how successful his administration has been in handling COVID-19. Just wondering if you have any sort of response to that.
Oh, God. You know, in addition to being a working scientist and keeping up with the grants and papers that scientists do, I've had a foot firmly planted in public engagement for many years. And I've always prided myself on speaking, just focusing on the science, not going into the political realm. And then the president took this really bizarre turn in May when he made a conscious decision they were not going to create a national response to COVID-19. And it was pretty clear. And in its place, they made a conscious effort to create a disinformation campaign. And then you realize, I've seen this before. This is a coordinated anti-science disinformation campaign. And I knew it when I saw it because the other hat I wear is, in addition to being a vaccine scientist, I'm the parent of an adult daughter with autism and for adult kids. And I wrote this book a few years ago called Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism to stand up to the anti-vaccine lobby, which really took off in Texas. And I'm the number one target. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the lead anti-vaccine activist, on his Instagram now calls me the OG villain, the original gangster villain. So I'm the original gangster villain. So I know
good for
all,
you.
I know all the anti-science. I know anti-science disinformation. I can smell it a mile away. And I said, this smells. I mean, this. There's no doubt. This is what he's doing. And then he brought in Scott Atlas to lead it, and it's having deadly consequences, especially now. And now that you're seeing this massive surge, 160,000 new cases today, we're going to lose 150,000 lives between now and the week after the inauguration. I'm just getting so upset. I mean, I was on New Day this week with Allison Cameron and John Berman. I love those two guys, and I found myself starting to cry. I mean, that's how upset I've been getting. It's just so sad to talk about this shit.
Here's the thing, Doctor. This is what I've appreciated about you. Just it is clear that you give a shit. Yeah. And as somebody who was watching this early on, confused about whether the pandemic was happening, but what the information was and how severe it was going to be, and the numbers. Of course, at the beginning, it was like, oh, one person died today. That doesn't sound bad. And then also understanding how compound interest works. Like, luckily, my dad explained that to me when I was a kid, and seeing how that related to this. It may sound weird to say this. I actually appreciated the fact that I felt from you a simmering anger at certain points that actually let me know this guy cares. Also, this is serious. How frustrating is it to see, like, for example, Dr. Scott Atlas or Dr. Ben Carson being put in these COVID pandemic leadership positions when their MDs aren't in anything related to viral diseases or anything to do with vaccines or virology?
Well, to me, I mean, this is I have a special distaste for physicians who are supposed to know better when they do this. I remember, you know, if you remember during the Republican Democratic debates back in 2015, 2016, there was, you know, Donald Trump at that time started saying misinformation about vaccines linked to autism. But the reason I threw something at the TV set that night was not because of what Trump said. It was that Ben Carson agreed with them and Rand Paul agreed with them. And I said, and the truth is they know what the real story is, and they're willing to, for political expediency, just to throw that shit out there. And it was really awful.
Let me just say to the anti-vaxxer that called you an OG villain, you are not allowed to be against vaccines and use the phrase OG. Like, you're not, you can't have a 10th century mind and a 20th century vocabulary. Like, that does not match. You got to choose.
Yes, that's for sure.
Well, I'm so not cool, I had to look up what OG is. And there it is. It's in Wikipedia.
Well, see, once again, a scientist doing his research, which is what you're supposed to do. You actually did you actually went, let me find out what this means instead of just guessing.
In the spirit of being hopeful, I mean, what do you think Biden's plan to respond to COVID will be like? You know, do you see any significant differences? And also, what do we need? What do you think we need to fight this? Do we need more severe enforcement? Do we need things to actually be shut down and consequences for people who are not wearing masks? Like, what needs to be done in this country for it to be as successful as it's been in other countries to shut down the virus?
First of all, when the president and Vice President Harris take their oath of office on January 20th, the nation is going to be in tatters. I mean, we're going to be looking at 400,000 Americans who have perished, including 150,000 over the last few weeks, because this thing accelerates, right? And I think there's a few things. One, we've never had a national COVID-19 response, and we're going to have to put that in place. And I think everything's so politicized. I actually have an article coming out next week, and I wanted as many people to see it as possible, so I published it in Microbes and Infection.
I get that magazine. Yeah, I get that.
Your standard bathroom reading.
I've been on the cover of that.
It's actually a good journal, and the editor's been really good about David Otsius about getting stuff out pretty quick. It basically says, I think we need to take the response out of Washington. That coronavirus task force under Trump was so toxic and such a source of disinformation that I wish they wouldn't even use that term anymore. I'd bring it to the CDC, Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, set up a war room and run it out of Atlanta. That alone would be a big difference. I think the toughest part that he's going to have up front is with all the damage done in the red states with the governors and local leaders who are still dismissive of masks, and Biden and Harris are going to have to identify some Republican champions to help them with this. And I don't know who those names are and whether they're even out there, but we're going to have to reach across the aisle. And then you have the vaccine rollout. The other thing you're going to have to do with vaccines is we're going to have to communicate with vaccines. So I think Operation Warp Speed had a lot of good elements to it, but one of the pieces missing was there was never a communication strategy. You know, you never had anybody up there like Andrew Cuomo on a regular basis saying, these are what the vaccines are, here's how long protective immunity might last, here's what could go wrong, this is what we're doing to address it. Instead, what they did was they left all the communication to the pharma CEOs, and that went really badly. And so you had all the stock dumping and trading and conflicts of interest and teleconferences with JP Morgan investors talking. That's how the American people found out one of the vaccines was put on pause. They could not have messed up the communication any more than they tried. So we're going to have to fix that as well. So now we've got two surveys, one from Reuters, the other one from Associated Press, finding that up to half of Americans will refuse COVID-19 vaccines, even if they're made available. And it's really high in the African-American community, vaccine hesitancy and refusal. And in part, that's also because of the anti-vaccine messaging. I mean, Children's Health Defense and other organizations targeted African-American communities in Harlem last year. Horrible inflammatory language. I mean, they targeted the Orthodox Jewish community first, comparing vaccines to the Holocaust. Then they targeted the African-American communities. You know what they said? They compared vaccines to the Tuskegee experiment.
I was going to say, it's very easy to sow distrust.
And it's had a huge negative effect. So we've got to repair all of that damage as well. This is going
to
be tough.
Is there a better way to develop a vaccine than we've had with different companies doing research, competing in the open market? Like, is there a better way to do this?
Well, there has to be, because, you know, too many vaccines that we need fall through the cracks. And that's what I try to do. I co-head with my science partner for the last 20 years, Mary Elena Botazzi, this Texas Children's Center for Vaccine Development, trying to make the vaccines no one else will make, because there's no commercial market. There's a huge market of people who live in poverty, but it's so we make the vaccines no one else will make. And the hard part is, you know, we've done really well going from getting grants and going from discovery through early scale up and pilot manufacture and phase 1, phase 2 clinical trials. And then we kind of get stuck. You've heard about the phase 3 Moderna, mm-hmm. Pfizer trial. I mean, those are probably $50 million. Jeez. Clinical trial, so we can't raise that kind of money.
But for COVID,
So for COVID, that was an exception, because what we did there was, for our COVID vaccine, we did the earliest. I mean, we'd been working on coronaviruses for 10 years. We hit the ground running when that COVID-19 sequence was put up on BioArchive, and then the team just worked heroically, you know, day and night, and they got. We got a prototype vaccine made pretty early, but because there was so much interest, we were able to identify a group in India. We did a non-exclusive license with Biological E in India. Now they're making 1 billion doses of our vaccine, which is amazing. We've never made 1 billion of anything before. So, and now it's in clinical trials, and it looks really good in animals. And the difference is it uses a 40-year-old technology. The same technology used to make the recombinant hepatitis B vaccine all over the world. And hepatitis B is significant because vaccine is significant because it's made locally in Brazil and Cuba and India and Bangladesh and Indonesia. So these new vaccines require frozen storage. The fives are one minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's going to be really, you know, deep, deep freeze. So it's going to be hard to get that freezer chain in low and middle income countries. So ours is very user friendly, and it could be just stored in the refrigerator. And hopefully we'll fill that gap. And later on, we'll see if we can get into the U.S., if we can get some backers who want to do that with us.
Well, if you need anybody to be like an endorser or celebrity endorser for your vaccine, I'm ready to sign on right now, Dr. Hotez.
We need you. We need you.
I'm ready to, as a black person who does believe in science, as a black person who talks to other black people, and I've talked to a lot of black people about this idea, because I think some of this is, like you said, it's just mistrust of the government in general that then gets funneled through. And also, not good dealings with the healthcare industry in general that then get funneled through this. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is it usual that there's multiple vaccines for a thing? I think that I thought there would be a race to invent one vaccine, but like you're saying, you guys have a vaccine, Pfizer has a vaccine, I'm hearing about other vaccines. Is it normally that there's several different vaccines?
No, this has never been done before. Hmm. I mean, the truth is all the vaccines work the same way. You know, if you look at a picture of what the coronavirus looks like, you know, we've all seen it by now. It looks like a donut with a piece of RNA stuffed inside. And then you have these spikes going around it. And those spikes are what bind to our host tissue. So all the vaccines work by inducing an immune response against the spike. And there's just differences in the scientific community, but the best way to do it, we think it's a recombinant protein, Moderna and Pfizer, think it's through an mRNA and AstraZeneca Oxford, think it's through adenovirus and J&J through adenovirus, but they're all doing the same thing. The theory behind Operation Warp Speed is, well, we can't mess around with something that turns out not to work at the end or give you really high levels of virus neutralizing antibodies, so we're going to make them all. Everyone except Hotez's. We're not going to make that one. I will take any vaccine that's authorized by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and I'll get it as soon as I can, even if it turns out not to be the best vaccine, because you can always get boosted later on with one of the other later ones that come along.
What is the realistic, because you hear all these time frames for like when the vaccine will be available to your average everyday person who's not a frontline worker, who is not in a vulnerable group, but just when you can just walk in and go, give me that vaccine. Do you have any idea of when that estimate would be?
Well, again, it's walk in again, minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit. It's going to be hard to get that at Walgreens and CVS. HEB and
they can't keep Kroger's, that in the same refrigerator as the Tropicana. They can't.
that's right. It's not going to be in the Quickie Mart. I think by the spring, things will really ramp up. And again, hopefully there'll be multiple vaccines. So the point is, by next year, this time, we're going to be in a much better place. And even by the summer, maybe even by late in the spring. Yeah, it seems like a long way away, but it's really not. And so that's the message right now. Protect your mother, your father, your brother and sister. Don't, you know, go to bars, and especially where there's a lot of virus accelerating. And the reason is because in what's happening now in places like North Dakota, South Dakota, and El Paso, Texas is really awful. You're starting to see ICUs get overwhelmed. There's so many patients coming in, and you don't have enough trained nursing staff and other staff. And that's when the death rates really go up. But, you know, everybody's so entrenched with this, you know, medical freedom, health freedom. This is our right to do what we want, and it's just suicidal. It's heartbreaking.
What does an equitable rollout of the vaccine in the U.S. look like?
First of all, it's going to be decided at the state and local level, but I think mostly it's the recommendations are vaccinate the healthcare providers first and first responders because they're out in the front line, and also the nursing homes because those death rates are highest, and then it's kind of graded based on severity and risk. And, you know, people, you know, then the essential workers, you know, the problem with a lot of the low-income neighborhoods is, you know, you can't work via Skype and Zoom, right? You have to, you know, you're on construction sites or you're in family-owned businesses, and a lot of those people are getting killed. And then the other problem is in the African-American, Hispanic, and Native American communities, you know, you always hear about it's all people over the age of 70. Well, 30 to 35% of the deaths in minority populations are people under the age of 65. So it's, you know, it's 45-year-old parents, right, of teenage kids. And every day, the Houston Health Department puts out the death list from the day before. And they don't provide the names, but they provide sex, age, and race or ethnicity. It's the same fucking thing every day. Hispanic, 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 Black, Black, Hispanic, 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 day in and day out, especially in our part of the country. It's Hispanic especially. It's, you know, this is causing historic decimation of the Hispanic families, just totally wiping out a whole generation of mothers and fathers. And they invited me to testify to the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and that was very meaningful. It was tough to do, but and that, again, that's not something I'm sure we haven't really heard that coming out of this White House. But it's one of the really important stories that needs to be better told.
No, I think the last we heard out of the White House about race and COVID was when Trump said he was going to look into it. And then he sent out Jerome Adams to say, talk to your Meemaw and your Peepaw and your Leelaw and a bunch of other names of grandparents nobody has.
Yeah, I think you had a fight with Jerome Adams.
Yes, you saw it.
No, I actually like him. I think he's a good guy. He's smart. I think he was put in a horrible, horrible position. You know, maybe didn't handle it as well as some others would, but you know, I think he was well intentioned. I think the heart was there. I just, you know, he was set up to fail. And so,
well, you did notice my fight with him. I had a lot of frustration with him, and I backed off because at some point I felt like, it's like, you know, it's like that scene in Rocky, throw in the towel. I think I was taking out my frustration with COVID on him. But I think, again, like the fact was, is that what you said about Rand Paul and Ben Carson, I was like, I felt him sidestepping Trump in a way that I felt like was really not going to be good for specifically for the Black community, and ended up not being good for the Black community. And I also felt like this is the thing I run into constantly. Why are you throwing away your professional reputation for this man?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've had conversations with him, and I know he's just really had a rough time. And I mean, if you look at the people who've been touched by President Trump, I think there are not many who have any legacy left. Mm. And he may be one that historically we'll look upon and was okay, not terrible.
I certainly hope that's true. I don't have anything personally against him, and I certainly hope that's true.
I think the mindset was, at least I can assure that some level of competency is coming out of the White House. I mean, because the other option is just to resign, right? Just walk away. And then you know what it's going to be, what they'd be replaced with. And I think genuinely some of these individuals really felt that they needed to stay on for the good of the country.
I respect your opinion, and hearing that come from you, I will cast him differently in my head. So, because I certainly, as I said, looking to a lot of sources when this started, it was just like, for me, it was like any port in a storm, and you wanted to hear. Right. And for me, I was happy to hear people were like, "No, this is going to be bad unless you take it seriously." And I felt like I was like, that made me take it seriously. So I really appreciated the bracing. So to the people who are like, who are saying, get ready for this, as opposed to people who are saying like, it'll be like, and not that he was saying this, but people who are downplaying it.
Well, it's not a fair comparison either. If you're working in the federal government versus being a professor with academic tenure.
That's true. Fair. Totally fair. Yes.
I have a lot more. But even then, it's still a scary place. Throwing stones at the White House on national TV I've never done anything like that before. I was scared. I'm still scared when I do it. But I mean, I can say, you know, a year from now that, you know, I woke up at 4 a.m. every morning and, worked into the night, either focused on developing our vaccine or communicating to the nation what the truth is about the science. I'm totally exhausted, I'm frustrated, I'm scared, but I can say at least I gave everything I got.
Speaking of things you've never done before, you were recently on TMZ talking about the Pfizer vaccine. Did you ever imagine that reality?
That was fun. That was, I do have a few guilty pleasures. one of them is Jamaican meat patties. The other is, I watch TMZ every now and then. So when they asked me, I said, oh my God. It was really great fun talking with Harvey and Charles. They're terrific guys and smart and compassionate. That was a really great time.
So before we let you go, I just the big thing that is that people are talking about when they talk about COVID now, especially medical professionals, is Thanksgiving. Like that being like a time when this could really, a lot could change for the good or for the worse around Thanksgiving. What have you, I'm sure you've thought about your Thanksgiving. Are there things you're doing that you'd recommend, or what would you recommend to all of us for Thanksgiving?
Well, what I'm recommending is this is a horrible time. Keep your social distancing unit intact and try to minimize the amount of contact you have with other people. If you can, and I know it's heartbreaking around Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, for instance, my oldest daughter is a research scientist at UCLA, and she was going to come with her husband. We didn't want them to fly, so they were going to drive. But then, you know, you get from LA to Houston, all roads go through New Mexico and El Paso, which is a train wreck right now. That's COVID central, almost as bad as the North Central U.S. And I just had to call Emmy, and I said, Emmy, you just can't come. It's too dangerous. It's just, I mean, you know, compared to the human tragedies happening tonight and every night, you know, it's nothing. But it was still, you know, very sad for us. But I just say, look, you know, this is not forever. This is just a few more months of this, and then life's going to get a lot better. And the other thing I'm always recommending as well is beyond that social distancing unit is try not to be alone during this time, and also recognize that it's going to be scary news, and you're going to get sad, you're going to get upset, you're going to get depressed. Have numbers ready for mental health counseling, virtual mental health counseling, or people that you can talk to. And just remember, you're not alone. I mean, the whole country is going through this right now.
Thank you, Dr. Hotez, for being on Politically Reactive. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Love you guys. You're the best.
I'm officially letting my beef go with Dr. Jerome Adams. I can be a bigger person than I was. So thank you for encouraging me to do that.
Well, it's just that, you know, Trump just sets you up to make you look awful. And he brings, you know, brings out the worst in people. He has what I call the anti-Midas touch. Everything he touches turns to shit.
Dr. Peter Hotez directs the Texas Children's Center for Vaccine Development.
And he's got a new book coming out called Preventing the Next Pandemic, Vaccine Diplomacy in a Time of Anti-Science. Man, that book should have come out last year.
Like Trump reads anything.
That's it for this week. Thanks to Sarah Cooper and Dr. Peter Hotez.
Keep tweeting, Instagramming, and Facebooking us your comments and questions using the hashtag PoliticallyReactive. And please subscribe to the podcast.
Or leave us a message at 917-477-6525. Again, that's 917-477-6525.
Kamau and I both have Netflix specials, which are found on Netflix.
There's a Georgia runoff coming January 5th. There's a lot of activism and get out the vote efforts being focused there. If you want to know information about that, if you want to donate, go to gasenate.com. That's gasenate.com. We need those two Senate seats. Otherwise, democracy may be a wrap.
Politically Reactive is a production of Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network. The executive producers are Maria Zuckerman and Christy Gressman.
And me, W. Kamau Bell.
And me, Hari Kondabolu.
The show is produced by Matt Martin, Malachi Seeger-Sakir, and Kelly Rafferty. Will Stanton engineers and mixes the show.
And thanks, as always, to Brontez Purnell for providing music for the show. Thanks for listening to Politically Reactive. Bye. We've all been in this position. People are so nice to us, Kamau, that we think we deserve it. Yes, I deserve that free cup of coffee. Yes, send me a free t-shirt. I want it. And we're the most humble people in Hollywood. And even we have been somewhat jaded by...
Yes, we... Okay, now we need to get you a t-shirt that says the most humble person in Hollywood, or Politically Reactive. The most humble people in Hollywood. That's a good t-shirt for us.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.